Malacañang assures Filipinos it will distribute aid as Metro Manila and nearby provinces go on lockdown once again. The Philippine government also saying it's now more prepared to deal with the COVID-19 surge and in re-implementing enhanced community quarantine. We'll talk to infectious diseases expert Dr. Edsel Salvana about the re-imposition of tighter restrictions and how it can curb the ballooning COVID-19 figures. Former President Joseph Estrada tests positive for the novel coronavirus. And the U.S. reiterates its support for the Philippines amid renewed tensions with China over the West Philippine Sea. Good afternoon. I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hi, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Metro Manila, Rizal, Laguna, Cavite, and Bulacan back on lockdown beginning today to curb the surge in COVID-19 cases. Curfew hours have been extended from 6 in the evening to 5 in the morning. Only essential workers will be allowed to leave their homes, as well as those buying food or medicines. Gatherings of more than 10 people, that's also banned. Religious gatherings this Holy Week are also illegal. The new restrictions will last until April 4. Malacañang says it took advantage of the Holy Week period to impose ECQ because of its minimal effect on the economy. It vows to distribute aid under the one-week period.
We are relying on our existing budget. Ngayon po, yung detalye po will be finalized today kung how much, in what form, at sino po yung magbibigay. No? Pero may nabubuo pong consensus na siguro local government po, itong assistance na ibibigay natin is for 1 week, pero effectively it's for 2 days of work. Kasi traditionally work is only Monday and Tuesday.
On Sunday, the Philippines recorded more than 9,000 new COVID-19 cases for the third straight day. This brings the country's total number of infections to over 721,000, over 105,000 of whom are active cases. Based on the latest data, the country's positivity rate is now at nearly 20%. That means one out of every five people tested is positive for the disease. The World Health Organization recommends a positivity rate of 5% or lower for at least 14 days before reopening the economy. The Philippines better equipped to deal with a newly imposed enhanced community quarantine this year. That's according to Interior Undersecretary Jonathan Malaya. He says when the ECQ was first imposed last year, government had no national action plan, nor did it have isolation centers or proper health protocols. Malaya notes the country now has more than 200 testing laboratories and has since ramped up its contact tracing efforts.
Mas maayos na po ang ating implementasyon ng mga quarantine protocols. Mas madami na po tayong resources at this time at mas mahaba-haba na po yung dinaanan nating experience in defeating COVID-19. Yan po ang isa pang pagbabago natin kumpara dun sa NCR plus bubble. Kasi nung nakaraang linggo po, NCR plus bubble tayo. Ngayon po ay hindi na po tayo bubble per se. Tayo na po ay ECQ in Metro Manila.
Those heading out today and the following days, better listen up. The Philippine Transportation Department has issued guidelines for public transportation for areas under ECQ. Public transport vehicles will be operational but will be limited only to those authorized outside of the residences or to go outside of their residences. Buses and jeepneys will only be allowed to have passengers with only half of its capacity. PUVs and taxis can only have 2 passengers per row. At the Ninoy Aquino International Airport, only 1,500 international-bound passengers will be accepted daily. Ports, meanwhile, will be limited at 50% capacity. Trains will only run up to 30% capacity. Provincial bus stations will also have limited operations.
talagang mahirap pong bantayan lahat yan sa dami po ng ating pampublikong sasakyan at sa dami po ng ruta. Alam po namin na miskin magtulong-tulong po kami rito ay napakamarami pa rin babantayan at hindi pa rin kakayanin po ng ating mga ahensya na bantayan lahat to. Kaya po si ang ating kalihim, si Artogati po ay humihingi po ng tulong at kooperasyon ng lahat ng ating mamamayan.
A former advisor to the Philippine COVID-19 Task Force says the enhanced community quarantine in the NCR Plus bubble should be extended for one more week if it fails to slow the spread of the virus. Lechon also notes government's pandemic response is far from excellent, citing a lack of transparency from the health department.
It's not accurate and it's not transparent. Ever since when I left the National Task Force, one of the main things that I actually articulated was the lack of transparent, open and candid communication, the lack of a sense of urgency, and of course, timely data analysis that would actually give sound policy. So basically, if you say that we are excellent in terms of our pandemic response, why are we on ECQ right now? And basically, that sends a wrong signal to the community, because that will lead to even further non-compliance to the health protocols.
Former Philippine President Joseph Estrada is among the latest COVID-19 cases in the country. He was rushed to the hospital Sunday night. His son, former Senator Jinggoy Estrada, said his 83-year-old father is in stable condition. The older Estrada was elected president of the Philippines in 1998, but was impeached in 2001. He then ran and won as mayor of Manila in 2013. Some of the country's malls will be limiting operations in areas covered by the enhanced community quarantine. Robinson's Malls, Ayala Malls, SM Super Malls, Mega World Lifestyle Malls, Vista Malls, and Fisher Mall in Quezon City have all announced only essential stores and establishments will be operational during the week-long ECQ. These include supermarkets, pharmacies, banks, as well as select restaurants with takeout and delivery services. SM Supermalls will also be limiting their operating hours from 10 in the morning up to 5 in the afternoon only, while Fisher Mall will be open from 8 in the morning to 5 p.m., with its supermarket open from 7 a.m. to 6 in the evening. Parking will be free in Ayala and SM Malls, as well as Fisher Mall. Voter registration is suspended in the NCR Plus area beginning today, March 29, and for the rest of the ECQ period. Work in all offices of the Commission on Elections, that's also been suspended. COMELEC spokesperson James Jimenez said the poll body will use an e-filing system to minimize the impact of the strictest quarantine level. Petitions for registration of party list groups and political parties can be submitted via email until the deadline on March 31st, Wednesday. Authorities in India's western state of Maharashtra have imposed night curfews amid a record surge in COVID-19 cases. And as this report tells us, the financial capital of Mumbai alone reported over 6,000 infections in 24 hours. That's its highest single-day spike since March.
Authorities in India's western state of Maharashtra imposed night curfews on Sunday to tackle a record surge in COVID-19 cases. That's after financial hub Mumbai reported 6,123 new cases, the highest single-day spike since March last year. India's health ministry said on Sunday that the country recorded 62,714 coronavirus cases in the last 24 hours, the highest single-day tally since mid-October. And with 312 deaths, single-day mortality figures were also at their highest since Christmas. Several government hospitals in Mumbai reported they were running out of critical care beds. It's led to the mayor of Mumbai to allow only essential services to open at night, meaning that hotels, pubs and shopping malls must observe the night curfew rules. Residential areas with five or more reported COVID-19 cases in the city have also been ordered to be sealed off. The surge in cases across India comes during a vital election season, as West Bengal and Assam started voting for state assemblies on Saturday. The elections will indicate how support for Prime Minister Narendra Modi is holding up after a year of the pandemic and months of mass protests over farm laws.
In business, the Philippines' largest business group agrees with observations the country is in a far worse situation than where it was last year. Benedicto Yuhuico, president of the Philippine Chamber of Commerce and Industry, says government needs to improve on its testing and contact tracing efforts and not only rely on vaccines.
Para po yung aming mga senior citizens ay hindi na mahirapan. So nag-community po kami. 12 po ito ngayon, simultaneous ongoing sa buong Maynila. Ito pong mga napili namin na barangay na ito, ito po yung mga barangay na with the highest of pre-registered. Pero tuloy-tuloy po kami hanggang maubos na.
The Financial Executives Institute of the Philippines, or FINEX, meanwhile urges the Duterte administration to fast-track the procurement and rollout of coronavirus vaccines or let the private sector move forward with their own deals. A group calls on big companies to pay their employees who will not be able to report to work during the implementation of the enhanced community quarantine. The Employers Confederation of the Philippines, or ECOP, says while the impact of the ECQ will be minimal for companies this Holy Week, employees who are under a no-work, no-pay scheme will be the ones most affected. ECOP calls on big firms to waive such policy during the one-week ECQ. As for MSMEs who cannot afford to pay their employees, the group says government should shoulder that expense.
Unfortunately, I don't think they have time enough to be able to roll this out. The problem is the rollout. Then we can talk about it. One remedy that we can probably, any companies will agree, if the government guarantees that they will give those who no work, no pay, many companies will be willing to advance it, provided there is a guarantee that they will receive, that they will be reimbursed.
The Labor Department's Additional Wages and Productivity Commission junks a petition for a 100 peso emergency salary hike for workers. Labor group Defend Jobs Philippines had filed for an across-the-board wage hike in February, noting the current minimum wages in the different regions are insufficient for a decent living, especially in light of the COVID-19 pandemic and the soaring prices of basic goods and services. We'll give you more details on why the government thumbed down this proposal in our succeeding newscast. Well, tomorrow is the perfect time to gas up as local oil firms announce a rollback in prices effective tomorrow, March 30th. The price of a liter of diesel will be lower by a peso and 30 centavos, while gasoline prices will be slashed by 1 peso and 20 centavos a liter. Kerosene prices will see the biggest rollback, down by 1 peso and 40 centavos a liter. Going to take a break now. Coming up, more doses of China's Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine set to arrive in the Philippines today. And more news also after we come back. This is Dateline Philippines. Stay with us here on ANC. we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Malacanang assuring Filipinos it will distribute aid as Metro Manila and nearby provinces go on lockdown once again. The Philippine government also saying it's now more prepared to deal with the COVID-19 surge and in re-implementing enhanced community quarantine. Former President Joseph Estrada tests positive for the novel coronavirus. And the U.S. reiterates its support for the Philippines amid renewed tensions with China over the West Philippine Sea. Back with more news. More than 1,000 quarantine control checkpoints have been set up across the NCR bubble to ensure the strict compliance with COVID-19 protocols. 9,000 police officers were deployed to guard the checkpoints. Unlike last year's ECQ, the body temperatures of those passing through will no longer be checked. Instead, authorized workers will only be asked to present their valid company IDs or certificates of employment. Authorities promised to be flexible in the implementation of ECQ restrictions, assuring maximum tolerance or no arrests as much as possible. Police Lieutenant General Cesar Binag, the chief of the Joint Task Force COVID Shield, says citizens have been compliant on the first day of the ECQ. No more than 30 passengers are stranded in the country's seaports after the implementation of stricter quarantine measures in several parts of Luzon. Philippine Ports Authority General Manager Jay Santiago said these individuals were not allowed to travel because they have incomplete travel documents.
Dahil regular pa rin naman po yung biyahe natin, makikita po natin dyan yung may mga nakapila po. Pero yan, mga karamihan po niyan ay makakapasok po, ano? Basta po kompleto ang kanilang dokumentasyon. Makikita po natin na, kasi po ang ating patakaran, sila po ay pinapapasok po sa ating pasilidad 3 oras po bago po ang kanilang biyahe.
Now speak to infectious diseases expert Dr. Edsel Salvaña for his assessment on the country's response to this ongoing COVID-19 surge. Dr. Salvaña, nice to have you on the program again. Welcome. Dr. Salvaña, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hi. So I understand that you just finished your rounds. How are things looking like?
Lots and lots of COVID patients. But I also got my second dose of vaccine, so that's really hopeful.
And lots of patients, what are the symptoms? Mild, moderate, severe? What can you tell us?
Well, the ones in the hospital, actually, it's a mix, you know. But the people that we do admit usually do require oxygen. Some of them, most of them are stable. I've been fortunate that the patients that I've taken care of since January, even though I've had more than 100 COVID patients, so far I've only had 2 deaths, and that's about average. So what that tells me is that we really know how to take care of COVID, but really the concern now is that we need to have enough hospital beds because the emergency rooms are really full.
Yeah, so over the weekend, it didn't stop the cases coming into the hospital?
Yeah, I think what needs to be done, though, is that there are still some people with mild disease, and, you know, we should really have these temporary treatment and testing facilities more utilized, the quarantine hotels, so that the pressure on the hospitals is lessened, because we still have maybe 20-30% of people with mild symptoms that have been admitted from the past. So we have to kind of prioritize the beds for severe cases.
Yeah, Dr. Salvaña, remember in the early days of the pandemic, there were mega isolation facilities that were built by the private sector for government use. Would you know whatever happened to those? Because
right.
That can come in handy right about now.
Some of them ended up closing because, like in January, we had very few cases, and it is expensive to maintain them. But I know a lot of those are being reactivated right now.
Okay. How would you describe the current situation in terms of how fast the virus is spreading in the NCR Plus bubble? Go ahead.
Yeah,
doctor.
I mean, this is not just in the Philippines. It's worldwide. It's really surprising how fast this most recent surge of coronavirus is happening. I think that it's really difficult to deal with it at these numbers. And so that is why, you know, the ECQ was really, at this point, the only option to save the healthcare system. I mean, nobody wants to shut down, but we do have parameters to shut down, and the most important of that is healthcare utilization. And when we reach that threshold, you have no choice.
Right, and because of your expertise, Dr. Saldana, is this something that should be expected from a novel virus?
Right. I mean, we've already come to expect the unexpected, and you know, the other thing is we were feeling a little bit optimistic coming out of the holidays, because we know that there was a lot of movement of people back in December, and we didn't see the January-February surge. And so, you know, obviously you don't want to keep the economy as depressed as possible, but then as soon as you start opening up, the virus is really, really difficult to predict. And unfortunately, you know, you have to keep trying, but every time you open up, there is always a risk that you end up with a surge like this.
Do we already know how much of the cases that we're seeing right now are cases of the UK and the Brazil variants, and how much of the cases are because of the Philippine variant?
Right. The data we have shows that it's about 8% of the cases. So it's not that high, but it probably is contributing. But what's really concerning is that we're seeing these variants crop up in different places in NCR. So it's already seeded. So the scary thing about this is that the main driver of this is really, you know, just the old variants of the virus that are already around. Maybe we've relaxed our guard a little bit because we didn't have that surge back in December. We're trying to open up the economy. And, you know, unfortunately, this is what happens. And now that we've seeded the variants, if we don't do something drastic, if the variants take over, this is going to get even worse.
Yeah, because as you said, they're already seeded. All they're waiting for is a host.
Right. I mean, it's still low, less than 10%. But if they do take over, then this is not the peak that we're seeing right now.
And as you did your rounds this morning, Dr. Saldana, what can you tell us about where these people got their infections or got infected? Because we do know that there's been an increase in cluster infections, but where was the primary source to begin with?
Right. It pretty much mirrors what DOH is reporting, where a lot of them are still community transmission, a few of them are in the workplace. But let me tell you something. I have a laboratory at the National Institutes of Health, and we do swab people there, our own employees. And we've actually already had 3 outbreaks. The last one was last week. And the thing is, you know, these are very smart people, In terms of workplace outbreaks, these are very smart people. They do get it from the community, though. And, you know, sometimes one of the things that really, really stands out is that people keep eating together. And that's where you're most vulnerable, because your mask is off. Anytime you mix households, it's really, really dangerous, because then if one person from one household gets infected by another, then they can feed their own households. So this is one of the no-nos. I myself have not eaten in a restaurant dine-in ever since the start of the pandemic. And I understand that they're trying to improve ventilation and everything. But me as an infectious disease doctor, knowing what I know about how contagious this virus is, I have not been willing to take that risk.
Let me ask you something. Because I have been hearing, and I'm pretty sure that you've been hearing these reasonings as well. When you ask someone, for example, who got surprised that he or she got contracted the virus, they're most likely just going to say, I don't know where I got it. All I do is go to work, do the grocery, go home. Do you believe that? Or is there something that they're not saying? Is there something that they're hiding?
Well, you know, I don't want to judge people is one thing. But, you know, even our interventions at best are about 90% effective if used properly. If they're not used properly, it starts to go down. And, you know, human nature is, you know, you walk around, you see a lot of people with their face shields on top of their heads, their masks pulled down. The worst one I saw was, you know, there was this guy who coughed and he pulled down his mask. I guess he didn't want to soil his mask, but you know, there are like so many people around him. I mean, it is expected that, you know, adherence is very difficult, especially everyone's tired of this pandemic, but the virus never gets tired. And the thing is, you know, the virus doesn't have a brain, doesn't have feet. It really is people that spread the virus. And unless we're super vigilant, there will inevitably be a break in what we're doing. And it only takes one lapse for someone to get infected.
You know, every surge is different from the last one, right? But what to you is most concerning about the behavior of this particular surge that we're in at this moment?
Right. So, I mean, we've had three surges. The first one was in March, that was really scary because, you know, we were running out of PPE. We didn't know how to manage the virus so much. The second surge was around July, August of last year, and that was really more, we were seeing the hospitals fill up. It was also when the D614G mutation came in, which is 3 to 9 times more transmissible. But, we were able to control that after about 2 weeks. Now, this surge is different. You know, it really went up super fast. It did not behave like the other two surges. But there is one ray of hope during this surge, and that's a lot of our healthcare workers have already been vaccinated. And even with just one dose, we're already going to see some partial protection, especially against severe disease. Like I said, I just got my second dose, and in 2 weeks I'll have full protection, almost 100%. Even if I get COVID, I'm not going to die. So that's a big deal. And so we got to keep doing that, and they're going to keep vaccinating throughout this surge. It's considered an essential activity, and they're already going to include seniors and people with comorbids who are at highest risk for death. So I think that's really important because we look at the Israel experience. Mm-hmm. At the point where they got 50% of their seniors above 60 vaccinated with two doses, they saw their cases plummet very, very fast. Mm. And so that's really the goal right now, is to vaccinate as many as possible. And the one silver lining here for me is that we've given our healthcare workers some protection, and it's only going to get better over the next few weeks as people get their second doses.
Yeah, you're talking about the next few weeks, the quarantine restrictions that those came into effect at midnight last night. What are your expectations? Will it create a big enough dent in the numbers that we're seeing? I mean, we're only looking at what, a couple of days here, not even a week.
Right. So the thing is that the impact of these restrictions will not be seen until 2 to 3 weeks down the road. And we know that our mayors were already starting curfews and were really doing enhanced contact tracing maybe 1 to 2 weeks ago. So the first thing that you will see is the impact of those previous interventions. So I'm hoping that we'll start to see this plateau and go down, unless, of course, we had more seeding of the variants, in which case it will continue to grow up. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the early interventions already are going to start to have an effect. Because remember that these infections that you see today, those happened 2 weeks ago. They were infected 2 weeks ago. And so there is a delay in how things will go. And, you know, you do expect it to get worse before it gets better if you start putting in intervention. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. But I think the most important thing right now, even more important than the case numbers, is that we keep the hospitals open and we try to find beds, especially for people who are severely ill. Because at the end of the day, you can have maybe up to 50, 100,000 cases. If you are able to take care of all the severe cases and no one dies, then, you know, you would have achieved the objective of what you're trying to do, which is suppress deaths and keep it low.
Right. And we're not even talking about those who aren't ill with COVID-19. I mean, last week, that was the concern. You have patients who are ill, not of COVID-19, but with other illnesses who can't get the help that they need because of some of the hospitals have had to shift things around in order to accommodate COVID-19 patients, doctor.
Right, and so that's really important, is that we are able to deal with this surge. And again, it's not just NCR. They're already starting to recruit even the hospitals in the NCR plus area so that we can kind of spread this out. I remember in July, you know, we actually sent a person to Laguna. We sent another person to Pampanga. So, you know, it's really, it needs to be a holistic approach where the hospitals all kind of pull together, because, you know, this is really a challenge that is unprecedented, not just in the Philippines, but around the world. And so, you know, if there is a silver lining for the Philippines, it's that vis-a-vis the number of cases, we've actually kept our case fatality rates low. And also, if you look at the number of deaths per million, the Philippines is at 116 deaths per million, which is about 118th in the world. I'll contrast that with Belgium. Belgium has 20,000 deaths, but with their population, they have 1,900 deaths per million population. Belgium has almost 20 times the number of deaths we have per million. So yeah. One of the things that Filipinos do really well is take good care of COVID, but our Filipino healthcare workers, that is. But we can't do it without beds.
All right. I'm almost, I'm almost afraid to hear the answer to this next question. Do you think, Dr. Salvagna, that this is the last of the surges that we're going to see until we reach herd immunity?
Well, I'm hoping that this is the last one. And again, in terms of deaths, that's really what's important. And so the way out, the fastest way out of this is really to vaccinate everyone. And we're not even talking about vaccinating 70% of people to get to herd immunity. If we just vaccinate the most at-risk people, 25 million, so that's 12 million seniors, a million healthcare workers, and 12 million people who have comorbids like hypertension, those are responsible for over 90% of the deaths. And so if you give them protection against severe disease, you're going to see the number of deaths plummet by over 90%. And that is doable. We're already starting to vaccinate our seniors. The danger there is really the vaccine supply, because we know, for instance, that India is already starting to cut back on their exports because they're having a huge surge as well. And India's been really nice. They've actually exported more vaccine than what they've used at home. But that's going to change now because they're seeing their own unprecedented surge.
Yeah.
So our best way out of this is really to vaccinate and get as much decreased deaths as possible.
You're saying, you're hoping that this is going to be the last of the surges that we'll ever see before we reach herd immunity. But we know that this is not going to be the last pandemic, right? But based on everything you've observed since day one of this pandemic, how do you think this country can future-proof its pandemic response?
We got to listen to the scientists. We got to listen to the doctors. We got to embed science, sound science, into policymaking, and we have to insulate our scientists from politics. That, you know, the problem is there's a lot of opinions out there, and it's very, very difficult sometimes to get through all the noise. I'm not even going to start with ivermectin. But the issue here is that, you know, there are standards, and there are experts. The Philippine Society for Microbiology and Infectious Disease, these are the infectious disease doctors. We are not the same as cardiologists. We are not the same as orthopedic doctors. This is our life work. So we know what we're talking about, and we should be able to help the government, guide people, and, you know, without having to deal with anti-vaxxers and people who you know, twist the science or deal with pseudoscience and do personal attacks. You know, that's on top of having to battle a virus, that's the last thing we need. So to make us more resilient, we need to plan, and we also need to trust the science.
All right. I'm sorry I didn't hear what you said a while ago completely. Did you say that this isn't even the peak of the virus threat yet? Is that what you said?
If the variants become dominant, this won't be the peak. It's going to go higher. So we know what works, whether it's variant or not. It's still minimum health standards, people staying home if there's a surge like this. we have to do everything we can to stop the variants from spreading. Otherwise, this is not going to be the peak of it.
Yeah, and when you talk about that peak, what is your projection?
Right now, I'm actually keeping my fingers crossed that it'll start to plateau, because we should start to see the interventions from 2 weeks ago that the mayors were doing. But, you know, it doesn't really matter if it plateaus or not. The most important thing right now is we need to keep our healthcare system open, and we need to be able to find beds for the sickest people.
All right. Dr. Edsel Silvania, infectious diseases expert. Always a pleasure talking to you. You keep safe.
Okay, keep safe. Thank you.
Thanks again. Back here in the newsroom, the Philippine Food and Drug Administration says there are available supplies of drugs used to treat COVID-19 patients. That statement coming after the health department said there is a shortage of remdesivir in hospitals due to increasing coronavirus-related admissions. Remdesivir is an antiviral medication that was included in the World Health Organization's clinical trials for COVID-19 treatment.
Ang report po natin ng problems talaga yung mga ibang gamot, kasi dumagsa talaga yung mga pasyente, yung sekraki, no? So yung mga staff ng mga hospital talagang medyo na-deplete. Pero ngayong umaga, tinawagan naman natin yung mga supplier natin ng mga compassionate special permit natin ng remdesivir, at sabi naman nila, no, na meron naman silang supply at madidistribute naman ito sa mga hospital. Ganon din yung favipiravir.
The FDA again warns against the use of the anti-parasitic drug ivermectin for humans. It maintains proponents of the drug must first apply for its emergency use against COVID-19. More doses of China's Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine set to arrive in the Philippines today. The 1 million CoronaVac shots will be the first doses purchased by the Philippines. China had earlier donated 1 million doses of CoronaVac to the Philippines, and that's amid renewed tensions in the West Philippine Sea. Manila's ambassador to Beijing, Chito Santa Romana, says more vaccines from Sinovac will be shipped to the Philippines every month, with a target to purchase 25 million doses. The United States reiterates its support for the Philippines amid the presence of China's maritime militia off Julian Felipe Reef in the West Philippine Sea. In a tweet, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said, "Washington will always stand by its allies and the international order." The statement comes a week after the spokesperson of the U.S. Department of State called on Beijing to stop using its maritime militia to intimidate and provoke others. The renewed support comes after photos from an international group show Chinese vessels in the West Philippine Sea have been there for over 3 months and increased over time. The chief of staff of the Philippine Armed Forces has ordered the deployment of additional Navy ships to patrol the area. Australia also concerned about what it calls destabilizing actions in the disputed waters.
So Australia holds to, you know, international rules and norms, and we are concerned about any action that's taken in the South China Sea that interrupts those rules and norms. And of course, we do subscribe to the arbitral award of 2016. You know, we do hold to that and support that outcome, because what we really want to see in the South China Sea is freedom of navigation and overflight, unimpeded trade, and adherence to those international laws that we've all used and subscribed to for a long period of time. And if we don't subscribe to those, we end up in difficulty. And that's not somewhere that we wish to be. And
fresh off his historic dive into the Emden Deep, the third deepest spot on Earth, Filipino scientist Deo Onda highlights the importance of asserting the country's rights in the West Philippine Sea. Onda says he waved the Philippine flag upon reaching Emden Deep last week to show off the country's vast marine territories and resources. He hopes this will encourage Filipinos to speak out about the latest incursions in the West Philippine Sea.
As we assert our waters on the right side of the Philippines, there is something that is happening in the West Philippine Sea. And I hope the symbolic assertion that I did on the right side of the Philippines in the Philippine Trench, where humans had not been before, I hope it's the same symbolic assertion that we do in the waters that we have in the west of the Philippine Sea, especially with what is happening right now there. And that is something that I would like to remind the Filipino people, that we have the power to actually help and also call on the government to help us assert our sovereign rights in these waters. And I hope it would just put more emphasis on that.
A labor leader killed in Calamba, Laguna. Police confirmed that Dandy Miguel, the vice chairperson of the Pamantik Kilusang Mayo Uno, was shot dead Sunday night. Miguel was also president of the labor union at Fuji Electric Philippines. His killing comes 3 weeks after 9 activists were killed in anti-communist raids across the Calabarzon region in what has come to be known as Bloody Sunday. News overseas now. Sunday's suicide bombing at an Indonesian cathedral was carried out by the same extremist group behind other church blasts, including a deadly 2019 attack in the Philippines. About 20 worshippers were hurt in the blast outside a church in Makassar City as they celebrated the start of the Holy Week. The suspects rode a motorbike into the church compound and set off an improvised explosive. The attackers, a man and a woman, are believed to be members of the Jamaah Ansharut Daulah, which has pledged allegiance to the Islamic State. The JAD is blamed for a deadly church bombing in Indonesia's Surabaya city in 2018. In 2019, an Indonesian militant and his wife, also members of the JAD, were blamed for 2 blasts that ripped through the Holo Cathedral, killing Sunday worshippers and security forces. 2 other militants linked to that attack were killed by Indonesian security forces earlier this year. A UN rapporteur urges the world to isolate Myanmar's military junta after 114 more anti-coup protesters were killed last weekend. And as this report tells us, security forces also opened fire at one of numerous funerals held on Sunday.
In Myanmar on Sunday, it was time to bury the dead after the bloodiest day of violence since protests began 2 months ago. But after the country's military coup, even mourning loved ones is no longer safe. Troops opened fire at a funeral in the town of Bago, witnesses said. A woman called Ai was at the service for Thay Maung Maung, a 20-year-old student who was shot on Saturday. She said they were singing a revolutionary song when the security forces arrived and opened fire. There were no immediate reports of casualties from that incident. Ceremonies were being held across Myanmar on Sunday after 114 people were killed the day before. There were no reports of large-scale protests in Yangon or Second City Mandalay, which bore the brunt of Saturday's casualties. The bloodshed drew renewed condemnation from the West. UN Special Rapporteur on Myanmar, Tom Andrews, said the army was carrying out mass murder. He called on the world to isolate the junta, cutting off its funding and halting access to weapons. Words of condemnation or concern are frankly ringing hollow to the people of Myanmar, he said. Among the dead on Saturday, at least 6 children aged between 10 and 16, according to news reports and witnesses. In Yangon, 13-year-old boy Sai Wei Yan was being remembered. His mother is saying, "Mum is calling you. Can't you hear me? How can I live without you?"
Defense chiefs from a dozen countries also jointly condemned the bloodbath in Myanmar. They urged the military junta to stop the violence and to restore respect and credibility with the people of Myanmar. In sports, the arms race continues among the NBA's title contenders this season. The defending champions Los Angeles Lakers beefed up their roster by signing former All-Star center Andre Drummond. The big man agreed to a buyout with the Cleveland Cavaliers after they failed to trade him before last week's trade deadline. Drummond is expected to start at center for the Lakers, who are still missing injured superstars LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Drummond is averaging over 17 points and 13 rebounds this season. His signing with the Lakers comes a day after fellow three make that free agent LaMarcus Aldridge agreed to play for the star-studded Brooklyn Nets. In today's NBA action, the Phoenix Suns eclipsed the Charlotte Hornets in overtime 101-97. The Hornets forced the extra session with a couple of clutch threes, but the Suns showed their poise in the extra 5 minutes, led by premier guards Devin Booker and Chris Paul. Booker notched 35 points while Paul added 16. The surprising Suns remain second in the Western Conference with a 31-14 record. The Portland Trail Blazers outlasted the Toronto Raptors in a tight contest between two teams that recently exchanged key wingmen. CJ McCollum scored 7 of his 23 points in the final 2 minutes, lifting the Blazers to a 122-117 win. The game was played 3 days after the Blazers acquired guard Norman Powell from Toronto for Gary Trent Jr. and Rodney Hood. Powell scored 13 points for his new team, while Trent and Hood combined for 19 for the Raptors. A Filipino director who scored an Oscar nomination as a co-creator of Pixar movie Inside Out set to work on a new Netflix animated film based on Philippine mythology. Ronnie Del Carmen, who was born in the province of Cavite, says Netflix accepted his pitch to create a story inspired by his experiences of growing up here in the Philippines. Del Carmen is moving to Netflix after 3 decades of working with companies such as Pixar, Warner Brothers, and DreamWorks. Aside from co-creating Inside Out, he also worked on Finding Nemo, Up, and Toy Story 4. His career as an animator and screenwriter started after graduating as a fine arts student from the University of Santo Tomas. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.